from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up,
this is like a gift from God to come down and help prevent it from being spread.
That was House Speaker Nancy Pelosi at a joint press conference earlier today with Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. What was she talking about? I actually don't know. But we'll be joined momentarily by House Minority Whip Steve Scalise, here to talk about Schumer's claim that the recent disputed election has handed Democrats a mandate, mind you, to pass the Marijuana-Laden Heroes Act. Someone has been smoking something. Maybe we'll find out who and what. And is a precursor of the intolerant, is this a precursor of the intolerance to come? Law firms representing President Trump's legal challenges to potential cases of voter fraud are the target of public shaming campaigns by the left. What is the left afraid of? I thought they idolized the courts. Dr. John Eastman, senior fellow and director of the Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence at Claremont Institute, is here with more on that. And what can be done about the legacy media and the social media's near blackout on the growing number of voter fraud claims? The group has launched the EveryLegalVote.com initiative. We'll get the details from Kevin Freeman, who is a part of the effort. And given the extreme inaccuracy of most of the polling industry going into this year's election, there are calls from within to reform the system. Are polling firms and the media too close and even financially interdependent? Public opinion pollster and editor at large of Ballotpedia, Scott Rasmussen, is here to answer those questions and more. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Parler, it's at T. Perkins. And by the way, I've got a poll question for you today, and here it is. You can text the word radio to 53445. That's 53445. What social media platforms do you primarily use? Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Parler, or you don't use any? Let me know. Text radio to 53445. All right, earlier today, the Senate Minority Leader, Charles Schumer, and the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, held a joint press conference to call for the passage of the HEROES Act. Now, that is the bill that, $2 trillion, that the House passed. It's been sitting in the Senate for a couple of months. There's been negotiations back and forth between the Senate, the White House, and the House, I guess Pelosi, you should say, to get a reasonable bill through. Now, there's a reason the HEROES Act doesn't work is because it bails out mismanaged states and cities, all Democratic-led. And it does a host of other things we're going to talk about in just a moment. But I want to play this clip of Chuck Schumer saying that this is a referendum. This is a mandate from the people this past election.
This election was maybe more a referendum on who can handle COVID well than anything else. The Donald Trump approach was repudiated. The Joe Biden approach was embraced. And that's why we think there's a better chance to get a bill in the lame duck. If only the Republicans would stop embracing the ridiculous shenanigans that Trump is forcing them to do and focus on what people need.
And joining me to talk about those shenanigans they're being forced to uphold, like decency, common sense, and fiscal responsibility, is the House Minority Whip Steve Scalise of Louisiana's 1st Congressional District. Steve, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tony, always great to be back with you.
So let me just ask you point blank. Was there a mandate in this last election to pass the HEROES Act?
I'm not sure what election results they're looking at. Speaker Pelosi's talking about the results that ended up having her get a net loss of at least 10 seats as opposed to a net gain of 10 seats, which she's predicting. That's a 20-point swing. That's a pretty big mandate against socialism. Not for a bill that, as you point out, deals more with marijuana than jobs. It sends billions.
Nope, I think we may have lost him.
$100 checks to people here illegally. Those are the kind of things that are in the HEROES Act.
Yeah, and it goes even further. I mean, there's a lot of policy that is woven deep into the HEROES Act. Not only does it have a huge price tag, I think it's roughly $2 trillion, but it redefines terms like non-discrimination to advance their whole sexual orientation, gender identity issue. It actually precludes, it will preclude by, in effect, faith-based organizations from being able to be a part of the coronavirus relief. It also, Stephen, I know something you've worked very hard on when it comes to the educational relief provision. It excludes private religious schools and homeschooling.
Absolutely. And Tony, of course, days like now where you've got some school systems that are still refusing to educate children in the classroom, there is no better and more important time to have the debate about school choice. If somebody's going to take your money but not educate your child safely in person when other school systems are willing to, then parents ought to be able to go to those places that will safely educate their child while taking the money. So, but so much in that bill from bailing out failed states, they have a section that releases an untold thousands of criminals from prison. They still can't even tell you how many people that would apply to. What does that have to do with COVID? Look, there are bills that would get huge bipartisan votes that would just renew Paycheck Protection Program loans for small businesses. The fact that they look down on small businesses as if it's some kind of corporate bailout, there are millions of families that don't want to be unemployed and their businesses are about to go under. You could save those jobs. That's where our focus ought to be.
Right. And it also, as we made reference to the marijuana, what that is in part, there's several elements, but one is the Safe Banking Act rolls that into this, the full text of that bill, which grants marijuana industry direct access to the banking, which currently is prohibited under the Controlled Substances Act because it's unlawful. What does that have to do with the coronavirus?
Right. It's a totally separate debate that is contentious and, again, has absolutely nothing to do with COVID-19, with the businesses who are dying on a vine right now because some of these governors are still shutting everything down, even though the protocols are out there for how to safely reopen, whether it's your restaurants, your schools, your businesses. They're killing jobs. And by the way, deaths from non-COVID-related things like substance abuse, overdose, depression, suicide are all off the charts right now because of the shut-in. And they won't look at those deaths as part of the cost of these shut-ins.
Right. Let me just from the New York Times, we're going to talk about Charles Schumer's mandate. The New York Times in their exit polling on the top five issues that matter in deciding how you voted for president. Number one was the issue of the economy. 35% said it was the economy, followed by 20% of voters saying it was racial inequality, followed then by the coronavirus pandemic at 17%. Followed then by crime and safety, tied with healthcare and healthcare policy at 11%. 17% to me does not sound like a mandate.
No, and it was not a mandate for them. But look, they don't care about what the will of the voters is. You saw Chuck Schumer just Sunday in New York saying, if we change Georgia, we change America. I mean, Do the people of Georgia recognize that Chuck Schumer wants to bring his New York values to America using two Senate seats in Georgia? He literally would view the two Georgia seats as proxy votes for the state of New York and their values. I don't think that's where Georgia is, but that's what they're trying to do. And you even saw Joe Manchin standing up saying he's not going to vote to pack the court or to defund police. And, of course, he and AOC are now in a big back and forth. So liberals are fighting socialists right now over what happened, what went wrong in the election. Only could Schumer and Pelosi be so delusional as to think that that is some kind of mandate. Why are they fighting within their party right now in a vicious war if they had a mandate?
Well, I think if you want to talk about taking New York values to the South, you might want to ask outgoing Senator Jones from Alabama how that worked out.
Right. He voted with Chuck Schumer for those New York values and got repudiated. And he outspent Tommy Tuberville probably 5-1 and got destroyed. And think about Michael Bloomberg, Tony. Michael Bloomberg went to Texas, spent $100 million to flip the Texas legislature from Republican to Democrat. And what ended up happening is they got more Republicans. And he did the same thing in Florida. He spent over $30 million in Florida to flip their legislature. And they rejected his New York liberal values in Florida. And they increased their Republican margin in Florida. So maybe Bloomberg will spend tens of millions of dollars in Georgia to help us win those two seats and hold those two Republican Senate seats.
Let me ask you a question, Steve. I know you're headed to a meeting with the new incoming members of Congress, but I want to ask you this. You've pointed out what's been happening around the country this election. The Republicans gained, I don't know, they're still being tallied, but you're going to be within striking distance of the majority in the House. And I think in the midterm election that happens. You've got the Senate was not handed over to the Democrats, as we've been discussing. There's two runoffs races in Georgia that will decide the outcome there, but there's still, it's right now 50 seats in Republican hands. You've got state legislatures that have made gains across the country. What the blue wave that was projected did not happen. The pollsters were wrong. I'm going to talk later about that with Scott Rasmussen. But the reality is there's some inconsistencies here. Why the president, who many people wrote his coattails, these state legislatures, the Congress, it just doesn't add up. And I think that's why a lot of people are asking questions about the outcome of the presidential election.
Yeah, Tony, you know, there are a lot of states that had serious irregularities and didn't even follow their own laws. I mean, look in Pennsylvania. The law is clear that any ballots that come in mysteriously after 8 p.m. on Tuesday night when the voting ends aren't supposed to be counted, and yet they were counting those in. No one's been able to give us an exact number. If it was more than the margin, then that changes Pennsylvania, because that violates their own law. And the Supreme Court even told them the other day to keep all of those ballots separately because there are serious questions raised there. Georgia's state law has a mandatory recount because it was such a close race. You look at some of these other states, Michigan, Wisconsin, where they weren't even allowing Trump poll watchers, which their laws allow for you to watch what they're doing. They wouldn't let you watch what they were doing. What are you doing behind closed doors when the law says you have to let people watch you and be transparent? You kick them out the room. Yeah. Clearly, you had to be doing something nefarious if that's what happened, in violation of your own state's law. This has to be cleaned up. And I applaud President Trump for standing up for the rule of law and standing up for his rights, which are clear under the law. You go back to 2000. Al Gore would be president for that next 4 to 8 years if they would have just said, okay, AP called it for Al Gore. I guess he's president. Well, guess what happened? He didn't get the votes. No state has certified Joe Biden as the winner. Not one state has certified Joe Biden as their winner. That's a swing state. And yet the AP wants to declare him the winner. That's fine for them, but they're not the ones who send electors to Washington to select the next president.
Yeah, this is far from being decided. Steve Scalise, thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Always great to be with you, Tony. Appreciate the work you do. God bless.
All right. Steve Scalise, the minority whip in the House, represents the 1st Congressional District of Louisiana. All right. We're up against a break, but when we come back, I want to play the full clip of Nancy Pelosi so you can hear it all in context and you can decide what she was saying. So I'm going to play that clip from her from a press conference earlier today that she held with Chuck Schumer, saying that they had a mandate to pass the HEROES Act to address the coronavirus. And by the way, the Republicans have been working. If you've been listening to this program, they've offered, I think, 3 different proposals that have been voted down by the Democrats. Now, they were very targeted on dealing just with the coronavirus relief. It didn't include all the other stuff that they want to throw in here. And I commend the Republicans for holding the line. I commend McConnell for holding the line on that. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about the shaming that's taking place against law firms representing the president, a sign of things to come. Don't go away.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
In a recent poll, it was revealed that only 6% of Americans hold a biblical worldview. This research also indicated that Christianity's teachings on abortion, marriage, and homosexuality are not only misunderstood, but seen as dangerous and subversive. In response to this trend, Family Research Council has released a new set of resources in our Biblical Worldview series. In addition to our full publications, which cover the topics of Christian political engagement, abortion, religious liberty, and human sexuality, FRC now offers helpful summaries of each publication in this series, as well as accompanying prayer guides to help you and your family pray through these important issues. And finally, our popular Biblical Principles for Political Engagement is now available in Spanish. All these resources are free and available at frc.org/worldview. Again, that's frc.org/worldview.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Parler, it is at T Perkins. And don't forget to take our poll question today. Text the word radio to 53445. That's 53445. Talking about social media platforms. Okay, before I bring in our next guest, I want to go ahead and play that clip from Nancy Pelosi today, press conference with Chuck Schumer, saying that the election had handed them a mandate to pass the HEROES Act. And they were talking about the whole coronavirus. So here's the clip.
We are on a path now. The vaccines, which Pfizer vaccine coming out of the private sector, show great promise. And that promise is to say all the more reason to wear a mask, self-isolate, quarantine, and let us work together to get this done. This is like a gift from God to come down and help cure this pandemic, not cure, just prevent it from being spread, and with a vaccine to inoculate against it. And as we inoculate against the virus, we also should be inoculating against all the injustices that are contained in how it is being spread and the rest.
All right. Do you know what she said? I don't. I really don't. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. Okay, I'm going to move on. No more commentary there. There is an effort afoot. In fact, there's been a $500,000 negative ad campaign that has been taken out against law firms that are representing President Trump in the various claims and to address the voting irregularities that could suggest that there was voter fraud in this election. So when you think about our society, a system of law, we're ruled by law, the courts become a very critical point. What you see now is that there are those that want to keep the president and others from getting into a court of law to present facts to get justice. That is frightening. Joining me now to talk about this, Dr. John Eastman. He's the Henry Salvatore Professor of Law and Community Service at Chapman University Fowler School of Law. He's a senior fellow and director of the Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence at Claremont Institute as well. Dr. Eastman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks very much, Tony. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
I would assume that this would frighten any person who understands how important the rule of law is and how the courts are the ones who hear differing views and look at the facts and issue opinions.
Look, yes, indeed, it's terrible. Our system of justice is based on the adversarial system, and that means you've got to have competent representation on both sides of the aisle. But look, this is not new. The left has been trying to cancel legal representation for positions they disagree with for near 20 years. I remember when I tried to file a brief in support of the Boy Scouts way back in 1999 at a fairly conservative-leaning law firm, I was told that we were not allowed to do that. And yet there were hundreds of briefs coming in from major law firms on the other side. The same thing went on just recently in the David DeLeiden expose of Planned Parenthood selling baby parts. I mean, no major law firm would allow their lawyers to work on his behalf. So he's got a small little nonprofit outfit helping him with scores of lawyers on the other side from some of the most prominent law firms in the country. I mean, this is an attempt to deprive people of an actual valid representation.
And I would add one other case that took place just a few years ago when King and Spalding bowed out of representing the U.S. House of Representatives as it sought to uphold the Defense of Marriage Act. And I think, if I recall correctly, Coca-Cola was one of the ones driving the pressure on King and Spalding. So you have these big corporate clients that are saying, hey, don't touch these issues. We don't want any of your attorneys working for this set of values or those people who hold those values because we disagree with it.
No, that's right. And, you cannot have a legal system that succumbs to that kind of an extortionate tactic, because then one side in the fight is not going to get adequate representation. And the results of the litigation are not going to be in pursuit of the justice and truth as we expect the adversarial system to lead to. I mean, it's just when you've got 100 lawyers at the top firms with all of their resources against two or three lawyers on the other side with little or no resources, it's just not a fair
right.
fight. And yet that's the playing field they're trying to establish.
So, Dr. Eastman, what is the left afraid of? I mean, I thought they idolized the courts and everything that the courts put out. Are they not willing to let the facts be presented and justice upheld?
No, because they know the facts here, and the evidence is just compelling, the statistical evidence in particular, but it's backed up by sworn affidavit evidence of a pervasive vote fraud scheme that went on not only in this election, but has been going on for quite a while. We've got evidence, for example, that somebody in Wisconsin just added 135,000 votes to the total, and when that was caught, they reduced it and said, oh, that was just a typo error. And then they spread that 135,000 out among 478 precincts and did the same thing. We've been able to demonstrate that with mathematical modeling, and now we're trying to backfill with the actual evidence on the ground. These kind of things are pervasive. We saw 25,000 ballots from nursing homes of people 90 years or older, all submitted at the same moment in Pennsylvania. Now, you're not allowed to ballot harvest in Pennsylvania, so the odds of that happening are astronomically high. And yet that went on. And we know that nursing home fraud in voting has been going on for a very long time. And I think what's important about this election is the frauds are close enough that it warrants pushing back and really shining the light on what's going on here and hopefully put some people in prison for what's been going on.
And change the way our elections are supervised and the laws that allow this to occur, because we've got to clean it up. Dr. Eastman, I want to thank you for joining us, but I want to get you back on again to talk more about what's the future. How do we push back against this cancel culture that wants to deny people even justice in a court? I mean, we cannot have a republic, the rule of law, if we don't allow people access to justice.
Well, if Coca-Cola is pushing this, then we need to go to Pepsi, or we need to use our power in the market if they're going to use their power in the market to counteract it.
Dr. Eastman, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, this is concerning when you consider being a society of the rule of law. If you can't have access to the courts to present facts, you can't have justice. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Since the 1973 Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision, Congress and many states have taken various actions to stop taxpayer dollars from funding abortions or the abortion industry. As early as 1976, Congressman Henry Hyde led the effort to ban federal funding for abortions. The Federal Hyde Amendment, named after him, established the principle that abortion is not health care, and therefore taxpayers should not be forced to fund abortions. Despite these efforts, the abortion industry still receives millions of dollars each year in taxpayer money. In 2019, Planned Parenthood, America's largest abortion provider, received $616.8 million in government funds. Family Research Council's newly updated pro-life map tracks how your state has taken action to stop taxpayer funding of abortions. Go to frc.org/pro-life maps to see where your state stands in the fight for life. That's frc.org/pro-life maps.
Aw, man.
What's wrong?
I just missed Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, and our congressman was going to be on the show today.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
What do you mean?
Well, you can always catch the replay of the day's show.
How's that?
With the Stand Firm app.
Yeah?
Yep, you can catch that day's program and so much more. You can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes while conveniently going about your day. You can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on the main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news.
Wow, I definitely use that. How do you find the app?
Just visit frc.org/app and download, or search Stand Firm in the App Store.
Okay, that's Stand Firm.
Yep, Stand Firm.
How do you know all this?
Because I'm a SageCon, but that's another story.
Huh?
Welcome back. I'm Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, poll question for you today. Text the word radio to 53445. That's 53445. Text the word radio. What social media platforms do you primarily use? Have you made the transition from Twitter to Parler? Using Facebook? What is it? Let us know. Love to hear from you. Also, you can always email me, Tony@TonyPerkins.com. Love to hear your questions, thoughts, and comments. All right, we were just talking about how the left is now trying to cut the president and his campaign off from the courts. Incredible. But that's not the only place. We're seeing increasingly social media not wanting to allow conversations to take place in this virtual public square about voter fraud. Of course, the media has moved on. They're refusing to cover it. So what can be done? Well, a group of concerned Americans have said, we're going to try to help get this information out here. And so they've launched an initiative, everylegalvote.com. Join me now to talk about it. Co-founder of everylegalvote.com and host of Economic War Room, Kevin Freeman. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tony. Always good to hear your voice.
It's good to hear yours as well. So, Kevin, tell our listeners why you launched Every Legal Vote campaign.
Well, you've covered it. Social media 4 years ago was a place where people could go and they could share stories about the election and so forth. But those on the conservative side or just patriotic Americans who want to see how the vote actually turned out have been shut off. They've been canceled and cut off. And so we created a social media type site. We put it up in less than 3 days. With just some concerned people. We didn't have a lot of money. We did it on a shoestring budget, but it has been incredible. We've had over 1 million visitors to our site. It's been live 3 days, and we've had over 900,000 emails sent to legislators in the swing states telling them to count every legal vote.
So the website is everylegalvote.com, correct?
That's right. Absolutely. And we're working tirelessly to capture the stories. What we do on our site is you can go there and you can see evidence in various states. We don't have proof because proof comes after an investigation. The left wants to prevent even investigation. But we have evidence from all the key states that you can look up. You can even download your own experiences and share those. So it is really, truly social media for patriotic Americans. We'd love to see 70 million Americans jump on there, the 70-plus million that voted for President Trump, jump on there and demand the state legislatures count every legal vote.
And encourage you, I've looked at the site. I think it's great, great resource. And, folks, I would encourage you to go to it. And also, you will, now you don't verify that everything that's on there, but you give people an opportunity to report what they've seen so you, that information is out there.
Exactly. And this is an idea that Keith Lewis and I had last Friday. We started talking about it. It leaked out to Lou Dobbs, and it just started to explode even before we were ready. People are hungry for access to information because they'll see it 1 minute on Facebook or YouTube and then tell their friend about it, and an hour later it's pulled down. And they're like, well, it was there, not on our site. We're archiving everything, and we're putting it up so people can see all of the things, and then they can take action. And we're not raising money. That's not the purpose. At least at this time, we have no intention of raising money. We just want to get this every legal vote counted. And people need social patience till the process finishes, something Vice President Biden promised us but hasn't delivered. Social patience so that we can make sure people have understanding that this was an election with transparency. And it hasn't been yet to date, and we want to make sure the transparency comes.
Well, we have to have confidence in the system. I would encourage you also to maybe consider listing all of the lawsuits that have been filed so people can find those at one place. I actually made that recommendation to Ronna McDaniel, the chairman of the RNC today, that they track all that. So because the media is pushing back, saying, oh, this is just rumors. It's just rumors. But these things are real. It's happening. We're actually getting court decisions. The president's campaign's got a favorable court decision out of Pennsylvania today. So information is powerful, and that's one of the reasons the left wants to shut it down.
Yeah, no question. And that's what we're providing. We're providing access to information that the left will not let you see otherwise. It's a social media sharing site, and it's bipartisan because we want the truth to come out regardless of what the consequences are. That's what we're after. We're Christians, and we believe that the truth has to emerge.
I agree. We can accept the truth, but we cannot accept a lie that masquerades as the truth. Kevin, thanks so much for being with us today. Appreciate the great work you're doing on this, and we'll have a link on our site to everylegalvote.com.
Thank you,
Tony. Kevin Freeman. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and I would encourage you to visit the site. Look, we've got to utilize these alternative sources. It's amazing to me. We talked about this yesterday. The president has been shut down by social media over 100 times as he's challenging. In fact, I was looking at a tweet he put out today, and it has a little note at the foot. This is a disputed tweet. I mean, it is mind-boggling to see how quickly the left is moving to shut down public discourse. I mean, they didn't do any of this when they were making allegations about the president and Russian collusion and all of that and the impeachment effort. And all of that has turned out to be false, by the way. None of it has held up under scrutiny. All right, continuing a conversation about elections and polling. Well, there's now some soul searching among pollsters. Scott Rasmussen encouraging his colleagues to rethink how they do polling. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Are you looking to grow closer in your relationship with Jesus Christ and in your knowledge of God's Word? Family Research Council has a three-part series titled, Three Ways to Read the Bible. This series shares helpful ways to be encouraged and directed by God's truth by observing the text of the Bible and applying it to your life. There is no better time than now to get to know God through His Word by looking into the Bible to see what it says about itself, God, and humanity. There's no better time than now to begin devoting time to the Lord and to seek out His meaning for you. This blog series is a great primer on opening your eyes and heart to Him through the Bible amid the toils and troubles of today. Check out this helpful resource and learn how to read the Bible with not just your eyes, but with your heart and mind as well. To learn more, visit frcblog.com/ways to read. That's frcblog.com/ways to read.
When President Donald Trump announced his nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court, critics were quick to point not to this qualified nominee's record, but rather to her religious affiliations as a reason she ought not be allowed to serve as a Supreme Court justice. In an increasingly secular culture, it is not only the media that views faith as problematic for those appointed to judicial positions. Senators, particularly Democrats, have inappropriately interrogated nominees with comments and lines of questioning spanning theology, congregation membership, and associations with faith-based nonprofits, all seemingly with the intent to discredit the nominees. Family Research Council recently released a publication addressing this important issue. To learn more about what the Constitution says about religious tests, visit frc.org/religious tests. That's frc.org/religious tests.
The rapidly changing moral landscape of the 21st century presents a challenge for Christians committed to biblical sexual ethics. An uprising against morality has overturned centuries of norms concerning the family, marriage, and human sexuality. Secular culture is not the only challenger of Christian sexual ethics. Increasingly, theologically liberal churches and denominations are rejecting the church's historic teaching on marriage. As a result, Christians are facing increasing pressure to compromise the Bible's teaching on human sexuality. How should Christians who are committed to God's Word respond to these challenges? What does the Bible teach about sexuality? Family Research Council has a new publication that presents the biblical principles for human sexuality. It lays out a survey of culture, scripture, and church history that will help pastors and all Christians meet modern-day challenges to biblical sexuality with truth and love. To access this publication, visit frc.org/human sexuality.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us. The website, tonyperkins.com. Let me again give you the poll question for today. You text the word radio to 53445. That's 53445. You know, with all of the discussion about social media and all of that, I'd like to know, what social media platforms do you primarily use? Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Parler, or you don't use it at all? Let us know. Be interesting to see. Again, text the word radio to 53445. All right, we've spent a lot of time in the last couple of months talking about polling. All right, talking about polling. And, of course, when an election came last week, we saw that, as predicted, the polls were off quite a bit. There's some soul-searching going on in the industry, and it goes beyond just the pollsters, because I see this relationship between the media and polling companies that, quite frankly, is just a little too close. And I think they've become interdependent financially. And that's, in my opinion, part of the reason we're seeing skewed polls. But I want to talk to an expert and get his opinion. And that is none other than Scott Rasmussen. He is a public opinion pollster himself and editor-at-large at Ballotpedia. Scott, welcome back to the program.
Always great to be with you.
Okay. Is my suggestion there off track, that there may be too close of a relationship between the media that uses polls very heavily in an election season and pollsters who rely upon the media to fund their polls?
To fund and promote. And yes, it's not a healthy relationship. You know, in a recent column, I said it's a little bit, the pollsters are a little bit like a bartender who serves a drunk customer one too many shots of whiskey and then is surprised when there's a car accident on the way home. One of the problems that pollsters have, and this is something that's been going on for a while, is when there's an election coming up and reporters want more and more polls, we keep feeding them. But there should be a little bit of reflection. It's not because of this year or because of 2016. There have been problems with the broader election forecasting industry in every single election of this century.
Yeah. I read your article, and I actually liked your analogy about the bartender being the pollster serving another drink to the media who is intoxicated to begin with their own ideology. But that's another story. But yes. To carry that analogy a little further, voters ought to be like trial lawyers and hold them accountable for what they are doing. And I think your underlying argument in this soul searching that you're calling the industry to do is a very significant question. It goes beyond just the polls and the media. It goes to how it is undermining our whole electoral system.
Absolutely. What happens when we have forecasters saying one thing is going to happen and then something else entirely happens, or the perception of something else entirely happening, all of a sudden there are questions raised about fraud. How could they have told us this was going to happen and something else did? And it just raises a whole series of questions. And adding to that is just the partisan nature of it. You know, many years ago I did some polling in four states that all had a team in the Final Four of the basketball tournament, and all four states were convinced their team was going to win because that's what partisan analysis does for you, and that's what we have a lot in the political forecasting industry.
Well, I'm just looking down a list of the polls, pre-election polls, USC, Dorn's Live, 54 for Biden, 42 for Trump, Long Island University, 47 Biden, 36 Trump, CNBC, 51 Biden, 40 Trump, AP, 51 Biden, 36 Trump. And I mean, that's pretty much consistent with what we see, but that's not what we saw at the polls.
No, and one of the things, just to be clear, there's a distinction between there's all kinds of different types of polls. It turns out that polls that use the old school technology of live operators making calls were further off the mark than anybody else. And there's a reason for that. It's because we don't talk on the phone the way we used to.
But we've known that. We've known that.
That's right.
That's not a new development.
Right. And so you actually had a lot of other polls out there that did a much better job of projecting what was going to happen, but the analysts were still convinced that the old school way. So again, it's a combination of the polls and forecasters that is mixing this up.
But in the media, though, wanted those polls, I believe.
That's right.
They wanted those
Absolutely.
Polls that showed what they wanted the outcome to be. And I think that's where a lot of Americans are, myself included.
Yeah.
The polls are used more to shape the outcome than tell people tell the public where people are.
That's right. I would agree with that 100%. And in fact, one of the reasons I wrote the article that I did is because when I watched on election night, what I saw was not outside the range of what I expected from the data. Mm-hmm. My final poll on the national level showed that Biden was up by 7 with a strong Republican turnout. He would win by 5. And it looks like when all the votes are counted, he's going to win the popular vote by about 5. When I looked at that data and all the other information out there, what I told people before the election was there's a range of potential outcomes. The best case for a Republican would be a narrow Trump victory after weeks of recounts.
Yeah.
The best case for a Democrat will be a modest Biden victory. So I was expecting that, and clearly the results began to come in on the upside for Republicans, but not shocking. But the analysts were totally taken off guard by this, the ones we saw on TV. And I think it's because of what they were hoping to see.
And we've had you on the program before and some other pollsters that have modified their methodology because the habits of Americans have changed, and also because of the cancel culture we live in, that some people are reluctant to actually tell the truth. And so you've got to go about it different ways. And those pollsters were more accurate in their projections. So that would tell me that, number one, that's not new. And as I just said a minute ago, they should have changed their methodology, but they didn't. And I think it's for a reason.
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons for it. And one of them is the one you cited. There's another reason within the industry. A lot of those pollsters want to establish themselves as the gold standard and pretend that anything that changes the way we've always done it must be wrong. So they were trying to establish a way to distinguish between good polls and bad polls, and it kind of backfired. There's no other way to say that. But it's, again, this is something that's been going on. And look, I think the problem is bigger than polling methodologies. Let's start with a very simple fact. If you have a close race, I did some polling in Utah for the congressional race out there. My final poll showed the Republican, Burgess Owens, up by a single point. Well, while I'm happy with the way, you know, you present that poll and you try to present the range of potential outcomes, it is impossible to use a poll with a 3.5-point margin of error to predict who's going to win a race that's going to be decided by 1 or 2 points.
Right.
It's the wrong tool for the job. So one of the things I suggest in my column is we, as pollsters, need to take some responsibility and stop doing those last-minute polls. I am not going to do a poll on the night before the Georgia runoffs this year. I will do some polls early. I will try to set a focus on what the people of Georgia are looking at and seeing and who is motivated and lots of information. But I'm not going to do a poll on the last day to say, oh, here's who I think is going to win by how much.
Yeah, because I mean, having been an elected official and having been around this for almost 3 decades, those polls are utilized by the campaigns and the candidates and in the media to shape voter actions. And,
right.
And so if your candidate is you know, winning, you're motivated. Now, if they're winning too far, it can backfire. If they're way out ahead, it can just say, well, I don't need to go vote. My vote won't matter. Especially through the process, people, I found that the psychology of people is the psychology of winning. People want to be on the prevailing mm-hmm. side. And so that has a shaping influence. Not everybody's driven by a hardcore ideology and principle. Many times people just want to be on the prevailing side. I saw that among elected officials. I see it among the electorate as well.
That's right. And we also have to remember that not everybody lives and breathes politics. Only about 13% of voters talk politics every day or just about every day. Twice as many rarely or never discuss it. So when you're talking about a wide range of people like that, the information that comes out at the last minute can have an impact.
Go ahead. Finish that thought, because I want to move on to something else.
Well, no, and I was going to say, I think one of the things that I see is harmful in all of this when you talk about the election polls this way is there are many good uses of polling that just sort of get lost in the shuffle because of this obsession. Mm-hmm. I think we should be doing a lot more polling to get to the underlying attitudes of what voters think, and doing so in their language, not in the language of official Washington or in the language of politicians. And we need to find ways to lift up that kind of information, because what that's doing is not telling you, so-and-so is going to beat this other candidate. It's beginning to say, I need to understand why somebody else thinks that way. And let's find some ways to build bridges to that.
Absolutely. And that's how we often use polling at the Family Research Council, is to try to figure out where people are, why they're there, and how we can help, move to a consensus on something. A lot of times it's just language, the language that you use, that they understand. Because words, words don't always retain their meaning, especially in the culture in which we live today. There's the people changing the language.
That's right. Absolutely. I give an example in the article on one that's on an issue obviously very important to many of your listeners on the topic of abortion. I see lots of polls coming out about, do you favor or oppose Roe v. Wade being overturned? Well, I went actually and asked people what they thought would happen if Roe v. Wade was overturned. And it turns out a majority of voters don't know. They don't know what the legal issues are. They don't understand the implications of what would happen if it is overturned. If that's the case, then what's the value of asking them if this law should be overturned?
Because they don't know. They're just kind of guessing.
A better way to focus are their – yeah. You want to focus on their attitudes. What do they think about the issue? What are they trying to get to?
Yeah, absolutely. We just got a couple minutes left, Scott. And I want to step back for a moment from the polling in this election cycle to why it matters. Because you and I were talking before, and you actually write about this in your article, that this has been a problem going back probably 30 years where polls are off. But it matters more now because we're such a divided nation. We're an election comes down to just a handful of votes. So now people are paying very close attention if there's allegations of fraud or if there was manipulation. It matters now.
That's right, because we're having such close, divided elections, these differences seem to get magnified. You know, the polls were actually further off in 2012 than they were in 2016. They predicted a very narrow victory for Barack Obama, and he won by a significantly bigger margin. Well, in that case, nobody got too upset because the end result was what we expected. When you have a situation where Donald Trump can be elected president in 2016 by 77,000 votes in three key states, all of a sudden, all of these assumptions matter. And what happens when voters watch and you're expected, you're told one thing is going to happen and something else does, there's a natural inclination to think something's rotten here. Somebody's cheating. And it is challenging the legitimacy of our government. And all of us should be concerned about restoring that sense of legitimacy.
And, you know, quite frankly, under a fallen man, there's always going to be those that are going to do something that's not right according to the rules. But I think what has drawn more attention is that when you have the people in the power who should be abiding by the rules, bending the rules, changing the rules, or ignoring the rules, that inflames the situation even more.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, and this is a sad commentary on where we are. But a lot of people on the left were really surprised that some of their accusations against Donald Trump being corrupt or cheating didn't help them more. And they did find polls to support their idea that a lot of people maybe thought Donald Trump used his position to help his family. What they missed when they were talking about that was, yeah, 7 out of 10 people think that about Donald Trump. They also think that about 7 out of 10 also think that about Joe Biden. There is a perception that if you are in the political world today, you are corrupt.
Yeah.
And you are going to do whatever it takes to win. And that's part of the problem.
Yeah. No, that's been there for a long time. I experienced that myself. Scott Rasmussen, as always, great to have you on the program. Always appreciate your insights. And I want to continue the conversation about reforming the polling industry and the whole relationship with the media. I think it's a critical component of restoring confidence in our system.
Well, I agree with you on that, and I'm going to be writing a lot about it.
All right. Well, we'll be talking a lot about it. Scott, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And folks, let me remind you about the poll. Text the word radio to 53445. I'll have the results for you tomorrow. What social media platform do you primarily use? Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Parler, or you don't use social media? Let us know. Text the word radio to 53445. Folks, I want to thank you for being a part of Washington Watch. Encourage friends to tune in. Download our Stand Firm app, and you can listen anywhere in the country, actually anywhere in the world. And share the information with your friends. You know, our republic, as I've said many, many times, will never be maintained by spectators. It requires participants. And I want to encourage you to be involved. And I know many, many, many of you are, but you need to bring in others. So share the information from Washington Watch with them. All right, until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.